Hello, and thank you for attending this session. So today we're going to be talking about mixing peer-to-peer protocols with the Agrigor browser. So my name is Mauve, my pronouns are they, them, and everywhere that matters, I am at Ranger Mauve. So I do consulting on peer-to-peer and decentralized software via my company Mauve Software Inc., and I am high-key obsessed with peer-to-peer protocols. So I really like peer-to-peer protocols because they enable me to stop hoarding user data for applications and to stop worrying about managing all that back-end infrastructure. So instead of having everything mediated by a third-party service and having to worry about managing that service and, you know, privacy concerns and all of that, people can just connect directly to each other's devices and exchange data. So one of the cool parts of that is that there's no longer a central point of failure. That means that if AWS goes down, or if your internet connection goes down, or whatever else, you can still use these peer-to-peer protocols, and if you're on the same network as somebody, you can still connect to them and exchange data. So before we get into mixing peer-to-peer protocols, let's talk a bit about some of the more popular protocols that I like to work with. So one of the better known ones, which you've probably heard and used to, let's say, download Linux ISOs, is BitTorrent. So aside from its relationship with piracy, it's actually really cool for sending data around. And there's lots of different clients and implementations of BitTorrent. So it's kind of one of the more mature protocols out there. And it's solved a lot of issues that others might have. So it uses content addressability to identify and validate content. So that means that you take whatever files you're trying to put into a torrent, you run a hashing algorithm over them, and you get a final hash that kind of identifies that data. So there's the metadata that represents the files inside a torrent, and that's usually what's stored in a torrent file, or there's the info hash, which is a hash of that metadata, which is how you identify a torrent in a peer-to-peer network. So BitTorrent also popularized the use of distributed hash tables for peer discovery so that there could be a decentralized way of advertising and looking up peers that can't be as easily taken down and is more kind of like resilient. So one of the things about content addressability and BitTorrent is it means that you can't really update a torrent too easily, because if you change any of the file contents, then that means all of the hashes change, and that means you get a new info hash for a torrent. So if you want to actually mutate torrents over time and add things to them, you either have to have some out-of-bounds way of telling people to start downloading the new data, or there are some specs for doing mutable BitTorrent, but there's very few clients that actually implement it at all, and it's still very much like a niche thing. So similar to BitTorrent is the IPFS protocol. So it's a bit more recent, and it's been getting a lot of adoption in the Web3 and blockchain adjacent communities. So it's very similar to BitTorrent in that it also uses content addressability, but whereas in BitTorrent you address an entire set of files at once, in IPFS you can actually address and advertise individual files and individual chunks of files. So this means that IPFS can deduplicate data between data sets. So with BitTorrent, if you have two websites that are both loading bigbuckbunny.mov, you will actually be duplicating that entire movie in both sets. And if you don't have any peers for that chunk of the movie in one torrent, then you can't use the peers in another torrent. So IPFS kind of goes around that by advertising the individual files on their own. So that means if you have two data sets that are reusing that video, all the peers for sharing that video are actually reshared. So this also means that IPFS does a lot more under the hood to make that happen. So it's got to do a lot more network traversal and use a lot more CPU to actually process all that extra data compared to BitTorrent. So, however, you know, it is a trade-off like everything else. Also, IPFS does have mutability built in using this thing called IPNS, which uses public key cryptography and DNS pointers. So effectively how it works is you upload data to IPFS, you get back a CID, which is the IPFS equivalent of an info hash, and then rather than using the CID as a link, you take a public key and you sign that CID and you publish that record on the distributed hash table or broadcast it out to anyone subscribed to that public key. And now people can kind of do a lookup to see what your latest version is. So of course you can now update that pointer using your private key as many times as you want, and you don't have to worry about having to recreate a new torrent or start downloading all of those blocks of content from scratch. So this is pretty useful. But I think at the moment, to get the real performance out of IPNS, you need to turn on some experimental flags. So a less known protocol is HyperCore, which is primarily Node.js based, and it came out of the DAT ecosystem, which was a tool for exchanging data mostly in a scientific and like academic setting. So it uses a radically different approach from IPFS or BitTorrent in that it uses append-only logs combined with public-private key signing. So rather than you creating this tree of hashes for your content, you instead have an append-only log of data, then you can represent higher-level data structures on top of it. Basically, what you do is you sign the latest version of the log, and that's how peers can verify that the content is accurate. So this means that you can pump out data a lot more quickly than the DHT-based approach from IPNS. And it also means that you can encrypt individual chunks of a data set inside HyperCore without having to really reveal them to a seeding service, but still being able to download the full thing compared to IPFS, where if you want to encrypt content, it's actually really wacky to now have that content be backed up somewhere, because you need to know the structure of an IPFS tree in order to back up that tree, which doesn't play well with encryption. So HyperCore, however, as I mentioned, only has Node.js implementation, so you're not going to have as many clients written in other languages as you would with BitTorrent or even IPFS. So it's a bit of a trade-off between what you want. So what do I mean when I talk about mixing these protocols on the web? Well, most of these protocols have URL schemes that can be used to identify data within the protocols. And all of these schemes follow pretty much the same spec. So there is, of course, the scheme portion of the URL, which identifies what kind it is. So be it HTTP, FTP, or IPFS, or IPNS, or Hyper, or whatever else. Then you have the origin, sometimes referred to as a hostname, which in HTTP land is where your username, password, and website domain would normally go. But in the case of these peer-to-peer URLs, we can store other things here, for instance, a CID for IPFS, the info hash for BitTorrent, or the public key address for HyperCore protocol. So normally this origin is case insensitive, so there is actually a bit of a path to getting these protocols standardized, because they actually would try to use case sensitive identifiers, which broke anything that would be parsing URLs according to the spec. And then finally, there's the path, which kind of lets you point to data within a larger data set. So on a website, that might be a specific web page, but in, say, a HyperCore protocol archive, that could be a file within the archive. And so these URLs are used in various places in your browser in order to, say, load web pages, or load media like images, audio, or video, load style sheets, or load scripts. And in fact, also, not only can you load data, but you can also upload data if you're, say, trying to upload data to a web server using the JavaScript Fetch API. So usually these URLs are used in browsers to create HTTP or HTTPS requests, which consist of a method, either get or post or put or delete or whatever else, a URL you want to interact with, some headers that add extra metadata, which I'm not going to get into, and optionally a body, say, if you're uploading data. And then this, the HTTP response will give you a status code saying like, oh, this was okay, or oh, you missed some parameters, or the server crapped out, as well as some headers, again, metadata about the response and potentially the body, say, if you were downloading a file or a web page. So typically this looks like doing a get to example.com for example.txt and getting back a 200 status code with the content of example.txt, which is hello world in this example. What if we took the same conventions but applied them to peer-to-peer URLs? So what does it mean to get an IPNS URL? And what would it mean to try to post some data to HyperCore protocol? So this is what I tried to explore using AgriCore. So it's a minimal web browser that I created to mix these protocols together under a common HTTP-like interface. It aims to have as few assumptions and features as possible and focuses on being extendable via standard web extensions, which again can access all of these peer-to-peer protocols. So rather than doing bookmarks internally, you could potentially install an extension that will sync your bookmarks across devices using HyperCore protocol, for example. And so we have a few protocols implemented in AgriCore already. So we have IPFS and IPNS, of course. We have HyperCore protocol. We have this new protocol scheme I'm trying to standardize called BitTorrent:// which we still need to push that through the standards bodies. But you can also use BitTorrent magnet links in order to load data. We support GunDB. And this is kind of an experimental thing that one of the members of the community has contributed, which is really exciting. We support the Gemini protocol, which honestly isn't even peer-to-peer, but I just think it's cool. It's kind of like Gopher, but modern and more minimal. And then we also support loading stuff from Secure Scuttlebutt, currently only as a viewer, but we're thinking about embedding a full Secure Scuttlebutt node down the line, and maybe you can add to Secure Scuttlebutt the same way you would HyperCore protocol down the line. We're also, of course, interested in whatever protocol that you like. So if you're into Holochain and want to spend some time to contribute Holochain to the protocol suite, feel free to open an issue on GitHub or join us on Matrix or Discord and kind of chat about it, because we're very interested in mixing whatever protocols can make sense. So speaking of these protocols, let's see what it actually looks like to make a website using AgriCore and the peer-to-peer web. So first thing I'm going to do is create a new website. So I'm going to navigate to hyper:// fosdem, and bam, I just created a new HyperCore archive. And it has nothing in it right now, so I just see a directory listing. What I'm going to do is actually add an index file so that it'll load rather than this directory listing. So for that, we're going to use the fetch API, and we're going to tell it that we want to fetch hyper:// fosdem/index.md. And what we want to do is take that URL and we want to put some data, and that data is going to be in the body, and it's going to look like a markdown. So hello Fosdem, what's up? Maybe add some cool emoji, maybe party emoji, you know, gotta keep it classy. And I'm going to hit enter. And what this did is it sent an HTTP-like request to the HyperCore protocol saying to put some data to this new website I created. So if I refresh the webpage, bam, it loaded my markdown file and rendered it in Aggregor because, oh, by the way, Aggregor supports rendering markdown in addition to HTML. So this is kind of easy to understand for using markdown for blogs, but similar things can be done for any sort of content that would make sense on the web. So you can imagine, say, an application saving JSON files for, say, some sort of structured data like a blog or maybe a chat or whatever else. And rather than uploading it to a server, you can upload it to a peer-to-peer database and then send a link to somebody else and have them load that data directly from your computer and reshare it to everyone else. So not only does loading content using these protocols work very simply, but uploading and creating content can be done through a very simple interface. So rather than having to worry about setting up a database and backend infrastructure and learning how to keep all of that up to date, you can instead focus more on the front end and sharing URLs with peers to share data between each other. So speaking of data and peers, let's talk a bit about Local First Software. So Local First Software is a term coined by Ink and Switch, which represents software which kind of makes sure that data is owned by users, that it can work offline. It can also work on a local area network, say your local Wi-Fi access point, or over the internet. And it kind of scales from being fully local first to less and less local as your need arises and as your network grows. So peer-to-peer protocols combined with the web make this category of software really easy to make because, again, rather than worrying about servers and how I'm going to sync data that I've done offline with the server and worry about conflict resolution and protocols and blah, 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 all of that, you can just kind of shove data in an archive and know that it'll sync to whoever needs it whenever it needs to be synced. In particular, this is a really useful style for community-run mesh networks. So local-first applications are a lot more resilient to outages, say in your network layer, or say you're having a brownout and don't have power. All of your data can still be exchanged without the internet or without even a fully connected mesh network, as long as peers are within network range of each other or completely locally to a single device. So in addition to that, using data, using peer-to-peer protocols on the mesh means that you don't have to reach out to the internet as much, which can speed up performance of applications on your network and also reduce the costs of having to pay the larger internet service provider backbone to actually move data around. As well, it means that, you know, you're less reliant on web servers in the US that you don't control. And when AWS goes down, your community isn't affected because you're interacting with each other directly. So finally, one cool thing is that it makes it a lot easier to distribute it to distribute applications and author applications within your community. So rather than having to learn how to do Go and Java and Objective-C and all of these things to make cross-platform applications and to compile them and distribute them, you can shove a little bit of HTML and CSS or some markdown, maybe some JavaScript, in an archive directly from within your browser and load it up on any device nearby using the mesh. So this drastically reduces the barrier to entry to create content and applications for your community rather than waiting for Silicon Valley or someone with a much larger budget to make something for you. So I'm hoping this overview has given you info to start thinking more about peer-to-peer protocols and the web, and that it'll inspire you to create something cool. I think we have a few moments for questions, so feel free to stick around and ask away. Thank you for attending, and I hope, you know, to see you make something. Bye.